podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Vast and complex, India presents special challenges to clinical research and therapeutic product development, even though its rich natural and scientific resources and large and diverse patient population present unique opportunities. But in one critical aspect, clinical research and the use of regulated products are no different in India than in other regions: drug safety. Safeguarding the safety of patients participating in clinical research before a product is approved for the market, and safeguarding the safety of patients using that product when it is on the market, are critical to clinical researchers, safety professionals, and of course patients throughout India. So today we ask, what is the state of drug safety in India? Can patients participate in clinical research with a reasonable expectation that safety risks will be well managed? Can patients use approved medicines with relative confidence in their safety? I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the DIA Global Forum. Today my guests are two experts in the field of patient safety in India who look at the issue from different but complementary perspectives. Dr. Srikant Krishnamurthy, a consulting pulmonologist at Sri Bala Medical Center and Hospital, will discuss this issue from the pre-market clinical research safety perspective. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Srikant.
Thank you.
And Dr. B.J. Venkatraman, Managing Director and CEO at Ovia MedSafe, who will contribute the perspective of post-market drug safety. Thank you for joining us, Dr. B.J.
Thanks. It's my pleasure to participate in this interview.
Dr. Srikant, let me start with you. In March 2019, the Health Ministry of India released new guidelines for clinical research. How do these guidelines address patient safety?
This is a very important aspect of clinical trial, the patient safety. India went through a flurry of problems in 2010-2011, and subsequently the Health Authority of India went in for quite a few changes in the clinical trial regulations. And the way I look at it, March 2019 regulations, probably a culmination of what started off in 2012. There were three important elements which the health authorities have addressed with regards to patient safety. First is the informed consent process. Second was the functioning of the ethics committees. And third was the compensation issue for the patients in case of any study-related injury or death. Informed consent rightly so received a very important attention from the regulatory authorities, since consenting is the heart and soul of clinical research. And the Ministry of Health went into a lot of discussions with various stakeholders, and they introduced for the first time audio-video consenting of the consent process of patients participating in clinical trials. This probably is the first time, I think, in anywhere in the world such an attempt has been made, wherein we had to explain the process of the clinical trial, the protocol, all the details of the study, the purpose of the study, the possible adverse events, and explain it to the patient. And once the patient has understood the whole process, then he or she will be free to ask questions about the side effects of the drug or any other questions he or she may have. The point is, the whole process is videoed and stored in a CD drive for about a period of 5 years, and it's open to scrutiny by health authorities as well as the ethics committee members who may want to do an inspection of the clinical trial site. So this particular process at that point of time gave a lot of strength to the consenting process and also ensured transparency to the whole process, which I thought was very important at that point of time.
Does the ministry require that informed consent be audio recorded and video recorded in every case for every clinical trial?
Yes, it was initially that way when it started in 2012. But subsequently, again, following some feedback with various stakeholders, there were quite a few amendments, and the current position of this is that it is not indicated for all patients in clinical trials, and it's now restricted to only vulnerable patients and in new chemical entities. In other words, vulnerable patients have been defined based on the guidelines which have been given by the Indian Council of Medical Research, ICMR, which is one of the important research bodies of India. So they have a detailed list of who may be the vulnerable patients. So only for those patients, and that also only with a new chemical entity and not yet approved drug, one needs to do an audio-video. For example, if it's a marketed drug, one does not really need to go for this audio-video as of now.
So is audio and video both? Is that the requirement for those vulnerable patients' informed consents?
Yes. The next important change which the government has looked into has been the ethics committees. India had a number of ethics committees all over the country, and to begin with, many of them were not even registered and did not know how many ethics committees are actually functioning in the country. So this measure has really helped us to go in a very structured manner now that we know that the number of ethics committees in India are this many. All of them have to be registered with the Drug Controller General of India, that is the health authority, before the ethics committee can start functioning. Apart from that, the guidelines also clearly state the composition of the ethics committee, what should be the qualification of each member, and what is the role of each member in the ethics committee. I think this has given a lot of strength and value in the overall improvement of clinical trial scenario in the country, and also gives clarity to the patients who participate in the trial to know that their rights are being taken care of by an independent body like the ethics committee. And very importantly, the ethics committee has also been empowered to have regular inspections of all the clinical trial sites which comes under their purview. And they could go and physically verify the documents, talk to the clinical trial staff, and ensure that the protocol is being followed and ethics are being maintained as it's supposed to be. So to me, I think this has been a very important change in the country.
Have you seen an impact of these changes on the amount and intensity of clinical research in India since the guidelines were issued? Or is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. And we are just in the process of streamlining, and really hope that in 2020-21, one should see an impact of, because the current clinical trials in India seems to be more in alignment with the global requirements and standards.
Thank you. Dr. Vijay, let me turn to you. Can you contribute the current state of the National Pharmacovigilance Program in India? And how does this program protect patient safety today?
The Pharmacovigilance Program of India actually has made continuous and commendable progress ever since it was restructured and kind of formulated as the Pharmacovigilance Program of India, the PVPA as we call it today. It has been in operation continuously since July 2010. And so we have completed 9 full years, and these 9 years have been a defining period, because the previous efforts of India in pharmacovigilance were not that successful and were quite short-lived, as you know. Compared to that, we have come a long way, to the extent that, an example, we can say that the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission, which is the national coordination center of the Pharmacovigilance Program of India, the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission became a WHO collaborating center for pharmacovigilance in public health programs and regulatory services. That status was achieved by the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission in 2017, among several other achievements. So that way, like, especially the last few years have been really defining. So to go a little deeper into the program itself, it's a very well-structured program, as it has been proven, vindicated by what has happened in terms of results. So we have more than 250 ADR monitoring centers across the country. Each ADR monitoring center is situated in a medical college that is approved by the Medical Council of India. And this is a mandatory requirement. Having a pharmacovigilance cell is a mandatory requirement for the Medical Council of India. That is the statutory authority that approves medical schools. The statutory authority mandates that a pharmacovigilance cell has to be there in the medical school in order for it to be approved. So that has led to more than 250 medical colleges across the country to have some kind of a pharmacovigilance setup. And then all these are directly mapped to the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission, that is the National Coordination Center. And they have access to the VigiFlow software through which they access the Vigi-based database of the Uppsala Monitoring Center. There is one central processing unit, which is the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission, based in Ghaziabad in Uttar Pradesh state of India, where, to which all of these ADR monitoring centers, AMCs as we call, are connected that way. So thanks to this structure and thanks to the effort made by the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission in enabling all these ADR monitoring centers, there is a lot of effort that they are taking. For example, the ADR monitoring centers, although they belong to the individual medical schools, they have someone posted from the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission as the representative who will take care of the patient safety activities. Like, the name itself is a patient safety associate, and they would work alongside the pharmacology department of the medical college, and then they would go out through the hospital and collect ADR reports. So that way, the system is quite well connected, and all the data from the ADR Monitoring Center reaches the Indian Pharmacopeia Commission. Apart from this, the IPC also receives data from the industry, from the regulatory authority, that is the Central Drug Standard Control Organization, which is represented by the Drugs Controller General of India, DCGI. So from the regulatory agency, they receive some reports, and also from standalone physicians or healthcare professionals, they also report into the program. And considerably, we also see reporting happening from the industry. About 13% of the reports that IPC receives is from the industry, because for the industry, there is a mandate that not only the serious cases, even the non-serious cases that they receive have to be submitted to the IPC. Thanks to all this, the ADR collection is quite strong, and we have data from all these segments. Although there may be some kind of overlap from the reports received from industry versus the reports received directly by the IPC or through the AMCs, there may be some duplication, but still there is a lot of reporting happening compared to what it was. Of course, India is a big country, and proportionately have we come up in the reporting rate? I think that is still debatable, but compared to the last decade, we have really come out quite well.
To what extent is pharmacovigilance in India an active pharmacovigilance versus a passive pharmacovigilance, or a mix? What would be your assessment of what is the situation in that regard?
That's a little difficult question to answer, because right now the focus of the Pharmacovigilance Program of India is to collect as much of data, to the extent that some of the data actually becomes solicited, but the focus is to first collect the report. So in that way, it is slightly, we call it active pharmacovigilance, but still it is not targeted towards a particular product or something. In fact, particular targeted active pharmacovigilance studies, they are being contemplated for certain products, but they haven't happened in the real scenario. And when we talk of passive pharmacovigilance, that is ongoing pharmacovigilance activities, that is actually forming the majority. And there are certain situations where data from the Pharmacovigilance Program of India is being utilized to change the labels in India, like the label change recommendations are given by the program to the regulator. And in response to it, the regulator sometimes asks for specific events to be looked for carefully. So it's a very difficult mosaic scenario, very difficult to actually say which is active, which is passive, but it is growing. That's what I could say at this moment.
Dr. Shikant, let me come back to you. In particular, what steps are being taken to encourage more patients to participate in clinical research?
Well, this is a very, very good question and a very relevant question, I think. As of now, we do have some kind of activities going on throughout the year. I'd just like to share some of this which we have been doing. One is International Clinical Trials Day, which is on the 20th of May every year. So that entire week, a lot of activities take place in various hospitals and medical colleges and institutions where there is some interaction with the patients, and we try to tell them about why clinical trials are important, how important is drug discovery, and try to explain or clarify the myths which are involved. And there's a lot of fear among the lay public sometimes, you know, regarding the clinical trial. This could be, is it dangerous? How safe is it? So all these important aspects, usually try to explain to the patients on these occasions. Apart from that, there are certain groups which are very focused. For example, advocacy groups like for the breast cancer. There are breast cancer groups which basically work on this particular disease, and they're mostly focused on national or regional cancer centers throughout the country. And of course, we also have the Organization for Rare Diseases of India. It's called ORDI. So this organization rightfully looks at patients suffering from rare diseases, which unlike the common ones like diabetes and asthma, probably receive less attention. And this organization goes about explaining the various options available for these patients, including access to clinical trials.
Are there a number of patient advocacy groups specifically for rare diseases in India? It may be difficult to find patients who have rare diseases given the large size of India, and perhaps it may be difficult to detect patients that have rare diseases. What are some successful approaches in India to identify those patients?
This ORDI has its own website, and they have various methods to identify. They have a database of the rare disease patients, and using that database, they do get in touch with these patients. And they also connect via the big hospitals in India, the major national institutes which are spread all over the country. And that's one of the major ways they approach the patients. The another very important organization which I would like to mention is the Indian Society for Clinical Research, ISCR. ISCR is an organization of all clinical professionals coming together in one platform. It includes investigators, clinical research coordinators, ethics committee members, sponsors, CRAs. Anybody who's doing something in clinical research could be a part of this group. So the Indian Society for Clinical Research is a well-structured organization spread with branches all over the country. We have a northern, southern, eastern, the whole different zones spread over the vast country. And ISCR conducts various workshops, awareness campaigns in all parts of the country. And one important thing they do is the National Conference of ISCR, an annual event, wherein some of the patients who have participated in the clinical trial are invited to the audience. And these patients share their experience about what they had during their clinical trial journey. This has really helped in a big way to propagate the clinical research experience coming from a patient to the others who probably have not aware of clinical research. But one important rule which has come up in the last March 2019 is post-trial access. I think it's the first time that the government has ever spoken about post-trial access. And post-trial access has been mentioned in this March 2019 guidelines, wherein if there is a disease which does not have a therapy, and at the end of the trial, if the patient has benefited from the trial and an investigator and the ethics committee agree to it, they can be recommended for a post-trial access and the sponsors would be asked to provide the same. I think this also is one very important element which has been looked into by the drug authorities.
Is post-trial access allowed by the authorities? Are there any special provisions or pathways to provide perhaps compassionate use access to an investigational medicine that is still being investigated in clinical research?
The post-trial access provision has been incorporated in the latest guidelines. There are a few conditions one needs to satisfy. The ethics committee has to approve. The investigator has to make a request. And more importantly, the subject also will have to sign for it and say that he or she wants a post-trial access. And then I think we'll have to look at there are no alternative options available. So I think there are quite a few criteria to be satisfied. But this concept of post-trial access itself is, I think, the first time in the March 2019 guidelines. Prior to it, we did not have any specific guidelines from the health authority.
Are the sponsors obligated to provide post-trial access if the ethics committee and the patient agree?
Yes. That is, if the conditions are satisfied, which I mentioned, it has to be, there's no specific alternative available. It's not a blanket statement that you have to provide post-trial access. If one has to satisfy this criteria, and the request has to come from the investigator, approved by the ethics committee, and then it goes to the health authorities. One last point I wanted to make is India has 17% of the global health problems and such a huge population, and hardly 1.4% of the global trials are in the country. I think patient participation needs to really improve, and we could do a lot more to create awareness and improve patient participation. That's because ultimately, at the end of the day, clinical trial is one of the very important tools to improve the health of the communities.
Is it appreciated by the clinical research community in India that clinical research can actually improve the health of patients, even if they don't actually enter a clinical trial? The process of being considered for a clinical trial can itself provide some health benefits, for example, a medical examination.
Many of my patients who have participated in the trials over the period of, say, 5 years, 6 years through various asthma and COPD trials, they appreciate clinical trials a lot, and they obviously pass this message to their friends and relatives. So I think it's a question of knowing about clinical trials, creating the awareness before this can go in a long way. As of now, I would say it's probably limited to a very limited segment.
By the way, Dr. Srikant, I want to thank you for the excellent article we published in the August issue of Global Forum that you wrote on the state of clinical research in India from the standpoint and viewpoint of the clinical investigator. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Dr. Vijay, let me finally turn to you. How can patients and their caregivers contribute to the safety of marketed drugs in India in practical ways? For instance, does the existing infrastructure facilitate these contributions or maybe impede? What is your point of view?
So, answer the first part. Yes, patients and caregivers can contribute a lot to the safety of marketed drugs. Both the caregiver as well as the patient should be aware that even a good drug may harm. Like, I'm not saying that it can harm or it will harm, but it could have a capacity to harm. And therefore, there is some logic in reporting it. I mean, reporting in the sense that patient can report to their physician. If the patient also wants to report, it's fine. But there should be some kind of dialogue about this initially. But what happens is many a time in a scenario where there's a lot of patients, there are lots of patients waiting outside and the doctor is quite busy and the patient also hesitates to say something, assuming that it could be totally unrelated to the treatment. Sometimes even if the patient says, the doctor may not actually take it very seriously and say it's a known side effect or something like that. And then they would move on. So from this mindset, change has to move to a scenario where the dialogue is a little more open and there is a possibility for taking that reporting a little bit seriously. So that is the first step that should happen. And I believe this will happen if the purpose, the overall purpose of ADR reporting, if it is made clear to all the stakeholders. This kind of awareness has to increase even among the physician community in India, because the tendency is to believe that a drug that is approved is something that is full of benefit and the possibility of harm from medicine, unless it is overdosed or given in for a different indication or given in a different kind of a patient than expected. So this is the thought process that should change. And once this kind of awareness of the purpose happens, and then comes the awareness of how these can be reported. Once this happens, at this point of time, it's a very positive answer that I have, because the PVPA has quite a lot of ways in which they could be reached. They have a toll-free number which could be reached. Patients or consumers or caregivers, anybody could reach them from Monday to Friday during the working hours. And then we have, more interestingly, a mobile application through which consumers as well as healthcare professionals can report adverse events with just a few clicks. 4 to 5 pages, pages in the sense on their Android phone, right, they will have to fill probably 4 screens and then the reporting is over. So that kind of revolutionary app there is available and they could use that. And there is medicine side effect reporting form, as they call it, for consumers. And it is available in the different languages in India. As you are aware, India has numerous languages. So there are several regional languages, and all these languages have these forms which can be filled and sent even by the consumer. And last but not the least, social media. Name it, you have the Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission present in that. WhatsApp, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our traditional email. In all these methods, reporting could be done and authorities could be reached. The other aspect is, even if the doctor is not comfortable reaching out to a government authority, they can always reach out to the pharmaceutical company which is involved in the marketing the drug or manufacturing the drug. Now there is a mandate for them also to collect reports, submit to the authority. So that way, if a physician is not comfortable talking to the government or to the program directly, they can always talk to the industry. The advantage is also there. And I think that these are several ways in which this could happen, but the dialogue should happen. And then everyone should, the stakeholders should see this as a matter of priority. And the fear of being perceived as medical negligence or fears of being legally implicated, that should be allayed by the regulatory agencies and by the government authorities. They should give a kind of confidence that they would not be penalized for reporting in ADR. These are the things that should happen in order for things to improve. So by and large, I would say the existing infrastructure facilitates, and the mindset is the one that impedes, and that could probably, we could do a little better with that.
The availability of all these tools and mechanisms that you mentioned, including social media, various apps, etc., is very helpful. In practice, I want to ask you, how do patients become aware? How are they made aware of the availability of these various venues and tools, etc., at the time that they receive a prescription at the pharmacy, at the time that the doctor gives them a prescription? The fact that tools are available does not mean that patients will use them or know how to use them. So how do patients get this information and become aware that they can report adverse events to their doctor or to the authorities or to a sponsor company?
That's a very, very, very pertinent question. And today, the focus of the IPC itself is to look at the clinicians and the healthcare professionals to a greater extent and then the consumers as such. But having said that, they are also doing a lot of activities in terms of reaching out to the several government hospitals and including the patients. They do some awareness programs. And they also celebrate Drug Safety Week or those kind of awareness initiatives, and where the Patient Safety Associate hosted from the IPC in that particular medical college, they would go around the wards. They would tell the patients that if you come across something like this, you can always report. So that is being done. However, in India, the expectation or what we could reasonably think of is that the patient, if at all they would want to say something, they would confide in their personal physician. If treating physician or the family physician whom they are reporting to. If that cannot be achieved, it is difficult to find a patient directly reaching out to the authorities. So having said that, there is also a lot of online promotion of the activities that Indian Pharmacopoeia Commission is doing. And using the same social media channels which I mentioned, they also promote their activities and kind of make themselves more relevant over the social media itself. So while all this is said and done, the focus on making more physicians aware about these methodologies, that is being the primary thing, and they are doing by trying to get the peer-to-peer word of mouth transmission of information. So that is what they are doing. But the bulk of the information is going to the organizations which are already the ADR monitoring centers under the program. So outside the program, it already who knows about the program, it's a little difficult to reach out to the overall healthcare community. And there are certain initiatives where the IPC has actually collaborated with the Indian Medical Association and certain other healthcare professionals associations like the Indian Pharmaceutical Association, where they go about creating CME programs, and that way they are able to, it is not really gone off in a big way, but it is being started. And these actually, the certain amount of the professionals getting understanding about the various ways of reporting ADRs and connecting with authorities. But at a patient level, I strongly believe it will take some time. And personally, I would also say we go around sensitizing the patient first before we sensitize the healthcare professionals. It could actually become detrimental because the number of cases that could flow in with probably more noise than signal could actually create a problem is what I feel considering the scenario in India.
Thank you. Well, we've come to the end of our time together, gentlemen. And Dr. Srikanth, I want to thank you for your time and insights today. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Vijay, thank you as well for your insights today. And also I want to acknowledge your excellent service as regional editor of Global Forum for India. We appreciate your contributions month after month. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both. For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.